It's the True Faith Podcast, your three-quarter season review. I'm Alex Hurst, full house tonight. We are joined by Ben Wade, Mickey Collin, full name, Si Campbell, Arnie Bollins. Two new lads on tonight. We've got Daniel Olsen from NUFC 360. Daniel, thanks for joining me. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
We've also got Simon Mooney, a.k.a. Chubbs, first time on the podcast. Chubbs, great to have you.
Thanks very much, Alex, gents.
Lads, I'm going to open this pretty broadly. Three quarters of the way through the season, we've done a quarter review each stage of the way. We've been top of the league every time. We're still top of the league, Mickey. How has it been for you since Christmas? 5 wins, 5 draws, 2 defeats. Have we slipped up a bit, or do you think, nah, top of the league, this is where we need to be?
Basically, yeah, I think we're top of the league. People need to stop worrying so much. That's all we ever said in the summer was, we just need to get promoted. We're currently top of the league with the most goals and the most points. Nothing else matters.
Lads, anyone want to come in that? Anyone disagree?
Yeah, I'll disagree. There is a slight reason to be worried in that we have 5 home games left and our home form is atrocious for a team that's top of the league. Team that's top of the league, you'd expect to have class home form, and we don't.
Well, we've got class away form, so
yeah, but we've only got 3 of them games.
But Bolin, looking at the teams we've got, you know, Wigan, Burton, Preston, Barnsley. Every team we've played at home, we've beaten away as well. So there's no fear there. Anyone to take Bolin up on that? Anyone else worried about the home form?
I'm worried slightly, but not about the players, more about the fans. I think the reason we've got atrocious home form is because we don't back ourselves and we just have too much expectancy, which is a massive stereotype in Newcastle fans at the minute. But I think that's what's basically dragging me down every time we play at home.
Yeah, we've spoken about that a lot. I totally agree.
You'd hope they'd be a bit worried as well, because Huddersfield are what, 6 points off the promotion places with a game
seven.
In hand?
Seven? Yeah, technically 8 with goal difference.
And still have a game in hand, though. And
the game in hand, Bolin's second last game of the season, so chances are it's not going to be done.
Not done and dusted. And if anyone's capable of having a mare in the last 8 games and fucking it up, it's Newcastle United.
I was going to say, this team and this manager and this season, has that given you any reason to think if there's anyone who would fuck it up, it would be us? I'd think, we're less likely to fuck up than we ever have been.
Every time we've had a bit of a wobble this season, every single time there's been a question asked of Rafa, we've gone and won, like a Brighton, or we've gone and won 3 or 4 games in a row. You know, he's always answered the questions. Whenever there's a bit of pressure on him, he pulls it out.
But only being 1 point top with a very good Huddersfield side in third, I think you've got to be a little bit worried.
I'm not worried at all. I think we're going to get promoted.
I think 8 games to go, Bolland being, I'm going to say it again, technically 8 points clear, but 8 points clear, they've got a game in hand with 8 games to go. Newcastle are something like 1 to 30 to be promoted, or 1 to 25, I mean.
Is that the odds?
Yeah.
That's excessive.
It is excessive. Daniel, I'll bring you in. Daniel, yeah. The lads here, you know, we're recording from Newcastle. Do you share that as an international fan? Do you share that fear that Bolin's talking about a little bit? Or do you think, nah, we're home and hosed?
No, I think we'll get promoted. I don't think the home form is that big of an issue. It's only an issue if the players perceive it as an issue. There's maybe some pressure playing at home, and if the idea creeps into their mind that the home games are a problem for them, then it'll continue to be. But in terms of Rafa's history with, for example, Liverpool and other teams, there's no pattern that he's extremely good away compared to home or anything like that. So I think we're not cut and dry, but I think it's harder to not get promoted now than it is to get promoted.
Okay, very interesting, Daniel. I think you made a good point there that Benitez he's been consistently good across his career. It's never like Liverpool had a shit season away from home, or Valencia were unbelievable at home and terrible away. He's always had that consistency. Mickey wants to come in on this one.
No, after you.
After me. About.
What was on that before?
So, I mean, yeah, that was kind of my agreement there with Daniel. Bringing back to what Chubbs brought up about why we're home form is so bad. And, you know, a lot of fans have been very critical of Benitez's tactics. He should play 2 up front. he should do this, he should do that, we should be more aggressive, we should press higher. I know, well, Trubb has already raised it, Mickey, you're of the same opinion that perhaps there's some blame to be had for
the There's definitely something to say of it. There has to be a reason why our home form is worse than our away form, and how much of that's down to teams bringing negative tactics to St James's to quieten us down, and how much is down to a really, really hostile home crowd at times. I mean, it has to play some part in it. It has to. You can't be a player and be in that atmosphere and not be affected. Yeah. If you've gone 70 minutes, you haven't scored and you misplace a pass and Dummett kicks the ball out by accident and almost everyone in the ground's up on their feet screaming at you, it's going to affect the way you perform for the rest of the game. There's no two ways about it. And it's completely fucking unnecessary.
Yeah. How often do you hear former managers, pundits and people who've played against Newcastle say, if you can get the half-time level or get an early goal, the crowd will turn and it becomes so hard. Like, people know how to play at St James's Park because the crowd can have such a big impact in both a positive and a negative way. It's like, if you let them score early, you're done for. Or if you can frustrate them and get them pissed off for the last half an hour, they'll be going nuts and there's your chance to take the game. I think everyone who comes to St James's does that.
Mm. Chubbs, why is it like this? Why isn't Castle fans always so harsh on the team?
Well, I think you'll have people like Jermaine Jenas call the city a goldfish bowl and say there's not really much else going on in the city, so we're pretty hyper-focused on how the footy team does. But it's been a problem for years, and we expect champagne football. We deserve it, because we're a sensational club, sensational background. But you've seen so many players come in on top of the world with a great reputation and leave as absolute shells of themselves, and players just completely devalue being at the club and just be broken in confidence. We've probably ruined people like Shola Amiobi's career by just simply not giving them a chance and coming on for 10 minutes to go in a game, and the crowd, well, he's coming on to Phil Alan Shearer's boots or Craig Bellamy's boots or whoever it was, Michael Owen's boots, and, you know, he can't quite do it. Who can get going in 10 minutes of football? No one can. And I think it's been a problem for years and years and years, and this isn't just my opinion. I'm going to try and back it up with a stat. So 9th of March was an article produced on the Chronicle. I'll ask you first. Who do you think has played the most minutes under Rafa Benitez?
Paul Dummett, yeah.
Fact.
That was a question that was it?
However, he's also the most criticised.
Yeah.
And we're top of the league. So, is he horrendous? Are the fans right? Is he actually okay? And that's why we're top of the league. Or do we simply not have another left back?
All three. He's not good enough. He's not a Premier League.
Look, we haven't got a left back because obviously we've got people like Haidara who just arrange it every other week, and we haven't had many options. But at the same time, you can see he's developed, and I think this he's found his level. I think he is a Championship left back anyway. In terms of, he's really solid defensively. Like, he's a good defender. And he's come on a lot, and you can see there's things in his game now where he's developing. I mean, I know we always joke, young 26-year-old Paul Dummett, but he's actually like, he is, like, you're seeing improvements from him, and that's credit to Rafa.
That's the thing, he's got better this season for me.
Of course he has, but it
just looks like playing against crap. He gets the better team. The better team is the better players in the league. He's had his best games.
I was going to say, we always joke about
back Paul Dummett in the Premier League again. Probably not, but I'd be willing to give him a chance next year, considering how many.
In certain games, Bolland, you want, when we're going to be under the cosh against the top teams, and we've seen it time and time again, we've cracked up about it on the pod, he's kept some of the best wingers in the Premier League out of games. Because, yes, he doesn't go forward, and that's the problem, obviously, as a left-back and an attacking entity, you need, like, more out of him, and no one denies that, but the fact that he doesn't get forward, he's just constantly in the right position. Yeah. Like, it's hard. Most of the good attacking wingers need, like, a space in behind, back fours. You don't get that with Paul Dummett. So he's got his role to play against certain teams, but it's just, obviously, people at this level, he needs to be doing more going forward, and that's what people expect from him, and that's the problem.
I think we can tie this back into the home form, can't we? Because Paul Dummett away from home rarely has a bad game. No one really gets in his back, because we'll play with a flat back four. The fullbacks, apart from Yedlin's, a kind of anomaly because he's so fast, but we're kind of stick that back form that don't really move all game. And it's kind of, what have you got? You know, fuck off, we'll beat you. kind of thing. But at home, that's what happens though, isn't it? Like, we'll go away from home, everyone gets all the fans get excited. It's like, we're going to beat Newcastle. Loads of them turn up and then we'll beat them kind of fairly in a really boring manner. And it's just like, thanks for coming. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. But basically, the point is, you're right, sense of frustration there for the home games. And let's get into the tactics a little bit now for home games. If anyone's got anything to say, maybe he's all... disagree, but is there an argument to us or Haidara? Good footballer, Haidara, I'm not saying he can beat a man. Oh, season side, he's definitely at the start of January. He hasn't been injured since. He just can't get.
Football's evolving at the top level, and fullbacks are becoming more and more important as attacking options. If you look at Tottenham United with Valencia on the right, like the majority, particularly Tottenham, the majority of their attacking play starts with the fullbacks, and it's caused by the fullbacks overlapping the wingers.
Victor Moses playing right back.
If we're gonna compete at the top level of the Premier League, we're gonna have to get fullbacks in that can attack us. There's no two ways about it. But next year, that's not gonna happen. We're not gonna be there. We're gonna be fighting for our place in the Premier League next year, realistically.
Oh, I don't know. We'll talk about that later.
Or maybe mid table. We're not gonna be fighting at the top of the table, are we?
No.
We're gonna be wanting to defend out more games than we're wanting to attack.
I think your point about football of evolution is interesting. Most teams this season, I think it's only Burnley. And only Burnley have not played a 3-5-2, 5-3-2. Not every game, but like every team has tried it. Every team tries to match. So that'll be interesting next season, because there's no way Paul Dimmitt's a wing back, but you could see him as a third centre back quite easily, I think. Yeah. So let's not write him off yet. Kufran left wing again. No, he's out of contract, Ben, unfortunately. If you're a player now, you've signed a pre-contract, surely. Surely you can sign a pre-contract somewhere. Anita and Kufran are gone.
I think what you're saying about the fullbacks is, though, the players that you mentioned at Tottenham and United and all the rest of it are athletically gifted. I think that seems to be where the game's developing at the top level. There seems to be a lot more athletes and a lot less naturally gifted footballers, in my opinion.
They have to be, because the fullbacks are covering so much ground now. Mm-hmm. They're such pace.
But I think you've got to... I think where Dumitru get a break is sometimes you need a bit of balance. Like, as you say, Yedlin, you know, he's not a headless chicken, but he's quite aggressive and he gets himself away down that right-hand side. You can't have both fullbacks going unless you are playing five at the back. You can't have them simply both going. I think you were talking last week, or the other week, about saying Dumitru wouldn't do too badly against Sanchez because he gives himself 5 yards. Yeah. He'll eye him up and he'll say, do you know what, actually, he's going to beat me here, so I'll give him, do you know what I mean? I'll give him 5 yards and see what he can do.
Yeah. He knows his own limitations, Dumitru. Mm-hmm.
I think he's a microcosm of
I tried last week and got shot down. Yes, I did gift him an assist that wasn't his, but
I just think he's a microcosm though of what's kind of wrong with English football. Like, you know what I mean, we don't back our own heroes. Like, how much stick does Wayne Rooney get from the media and all the rest of it? And you know, it's typical with England that we break down people that we should be backing. And essentially, the lad went to Gossie High, like, give him a fucking break, like, do you know what I mean? Back him.
Yeah. I think that's just an English thing to do, isn't it? Like, you do see, like, all the teams, they're much harder on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, it's like Colback and Dumont are the two most hated
players. I was going to say, yeah. For
it
us,
came up in that
you look at someone like Barkley at Everton, gets, like, dogs.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, it's just an English thing. It's, like, almost...
Maybe it's a northern thing though, because everyone down south thinks he's one of our own. Like, for all their local players, we would never do that. Daniel, I'll bring you this. Do you feel the criticism of Paul Dummett from afar is too harsh?
This season he's been very consistent. There's a reason teams usually target our right side instead of our left. So he's been very consistent. He's not all that going forward, but we have that in Yedlin and sometimes Anita. So I think, as far as I can see, this season there's been more people rating him. I'm not sure if he'll do that well in the Premier League, but as you said, maybe as the third centre-back. But I think Rafa will get someone in to compete more closely with Dumitru next season.
Fair enough.
We've been saying literally since we started doing this podcast 3 years ago, we need to sign a fucking left back.
Yeah.
We still haven't.
He signed two, to be fair.
Lazar doesn't count, does he?
He signed Lazar and Gomez, and it just that neither
one of them
is a
right back.
I've never had one chance to see Lazar. That was against Wolves at home in the cup, and I must admit, like, he was absolutely pony. He was really, really shocking.
We thought he played alright. He just looked a bit weak. He was getting knocked off the ball. Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, it's an odd one because you do wonder what's Rafa bought him on the basis of, because as you say, he doesn't fit the mold of a Rafa fullback in terms of he can't defend.
It's cost like £2 million though, didn't he? It was just like end of the window. Yeah. Like, we need
bodies. We'd spent like 30 days trying to get Brendan Galloway, and then it was like, oh shit, next on the list. Let's just get someone else.
Maybe he was listening to the podcast and realised how much we needed to sign a left back.
Unlikely.
Or he watched the first couple of games and thought, bloody hell, that's the abuse you get for playing left back here. Nah.
I mean, Gallagher Krauss is one of my favourites.
Atmosphere thing, I think a lot of it's born out of the huge amount of expectation there is this season. Like, the amount of money we've spent, Rafa Benitez is the manager, and we're getting beaten 2-0 at home by Bristol City for most of the game. Like,
there's all that. I think the people.
For a lot of people, that's just outrageous.
The people that get frustrated are the one we go 2-0 down, and yeah, it's not good enough to go 2-0 down to Bristol City. That's the one-off, really. Mm-hmm. It's the none of these guys who sat there raging on probably were any of the away games. They haven't seen that Newcastle. They've only seen the Newcastle that have had a bit of a wobble at home. Mm-hmm. So they see it as like, oh God, we're in terrible form. And actually, if you look at the 10 games at any point in the season, if you look at 10 matches, we've won like 7 out of 10 at every point. It doesn't look bad when you look at everything. It's just... Yeah. Small pockets of home form that some of these blokes, that's the only football they get to see. They take it more personally.
It's tough as well.
If you break down the defeats at home, right, I'm gonna ignore Huddersfield. Darrell Yamat still played for. It was a different era. Like, you know,
it's nice to see him struggling
again. Really nice. You know, Darrell Yamat, since then Wolves at home were shite, but Mbemba hoid one in his own net, and it was like, oh, you know. Beyond that, it was Blackburn, which was the week when we had 3 games. We had the quarter final. Like, there's always been mitigating circumstances. That Fulham game was, you know, after the three away games in a week, were absolutely class. Fulham were good, but apart from me, Fulham, Sheffield was a close game. We didn't play well. We still could have won the game. There hasn't been that many performances at home where I'm thinking, you know what, we were terrible here. You know, Fulham aside, they've been close games, so in the Championship, Wolves was grim, but it wasn't like Wolves had all the chances. They had 2 shots on target, I think. They had 2 shots on target. One was a goal and one was a save from Sells, I know, collector's item. I don't know. Like, I suppose I'll move it on to you, lads. If you look at the last quarter of, you say, the season, or since Christmas, we started drawing a lot of games. Like, we went through the first half of the season, drawn one game against Villa, which was Sells' fault. Why? What's happened? Why can't we see our games anymore?
I just think it's big fish, small pond, basically. Every team, when they play against us, it's like teams playing the Premier League against an old Man United. You know, where there's a massive target on my back. Teams, to get a point off us, they're really happy with it. We're top of the league. I don't think it runs that much deeper than that. I don't think that the players are, you know, not engaging or there's anything along those lines. I just simply think we're playing the biggest team in the league. If we get a point here, we've done well, and they'll set up accordingly. Or if they're at 1-1 with 80 minutes, they'll try and shut up shop.
Well, I mean, me and Bolland saw that first hand at Birmingham. Rafa made the changes thinking that Birmingham were going to have a go the last 10, 15. Nah, never happened. But why? Okay, I take your point, but why is that different than the one I lost?
In the first half of the season, I were taking them by surprise, maybe. People think, you know, is it tactically they've had time to look at we and work well out? Is that something that you think?
I don't know.
I would agree with that.
That Birmingham game could have gone either way. We could have easily scored a goal. In the first half of the season, we had similar matches where Gale just scored.
We've missed
Gale. Scored loads of goals. Like,
yeah. We've missed Gale over the past 10 weeks or so.
He's only just got fit again. It's not quite the same, and we've not really had Murphy. He's done his little bit. We're the striker.
Well, I've scored like bother with him 5 and 7, though, aren't he, Murphy? Yeah. I can't really argue with that.
It's just become really predictable.
Yeah.
We play the same team, the rotation thing.
That's the thing, though. Like Chubbs has just said there, I think it is. Obviously, we had the first 2 games of the season, you could just write off, like, they were mental. It was just, or like, we had a few injuries, a few players missing. We just didn't show up. But it took teams a long time to work out how to play against Newcastle. We went on that brilliant run. Okay, we had the result against Wolves, but that was, like, just an anomaly. It was just, we didn't turn up. Everybody had a bad game, and we got beat. It wasn't anything Wolves did. So it took time for teams to work out how to play. Where there's a few teams have worked out. I mean, Fulham played were perfectly, like QPR had a good go. Teams have started to come with a game plan now where they know if you shut down Shelvey, like Newcastle struggle to play. And also in terms of like when you press, I mean, some teams have come and just got it completely wrong since that, in terms of they just backed off and just let we have a go at them, we've torn them apart. But when teams have come in and they've pressed at the right times and they've known how to play, and you can see the teams that have put their work in, like, it's been effective. And I don't care who you are, when you've basically got one playmaker in the team like Shelvey, if you can stop him playing, it's going to impact anyone. And I don't care what team you are, if you can stop the playmaker, it's you're going to have him be in for a tough game.
You expect that the rest of the team is going to have an overhaul, though. I've written down here for a point previous, which we've never got to do this. Shelvey, Richie, Gale.
We'll talk about later, because I want to talk about next season later.
Okay.
So
I want to quickly.
Never mind then.
I want to agree with Bolland there. Like, the team we've got is probably doing about as well as it could do. Rafa wanted another midfielder in January. That was no big secret. Like, because he knew that with kind of relying too much on Shelvey, and he needed someone else around him to chip in. Same with the wingers. Like, we've got Gouffran and Richie. That's it. And Atsu occasionally, but he's not really done much for us this season.
That's exactly what he
wanted those players, and he's had to now finish off the season without them, and it has been harder than expected. And I think that the team's still doing fine, but we're not running away with it because we haven't quite given us that cushion.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. I was going to say, you know, if you look at the results from January onwards, he's asked for reinforcements and he hasn't got them, so it is easier for teams to work this out, and there isn't that extra competition and freshness in the side. So maybe that's the reason we are drawing games.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the reason we are drawing games.
It has got a bit stale, hasn't it? You can tell, like, I think just there's players within there as well. I think we talked a lot about the competition for places at the start of the season. That's pretty much, like, ironed out now, and there's not really any. I mean, we were talking at the start of the year about the centre-backs, how we had four, basically, that were vying for starting. Mm-hmm. We've only really got two now. Hanley's played a handful of games, and Bemba hasn't featured for ages. So that there in itself, Lascelles has had a couple of wobbles this season, but he's played through most of them. Obviously, he's the captain, but there's a lot of times at the start of the season where I would have expected him to get dropped, and he hasn't done it. And I think, I mean, it goes two ways. Obviously, you want to settle back four, back five or whatever. But at the same time, that competition for places was really working at the start of the season, because someone went out, the person came in was having a blinder.
I'll agree to an extent. I think one of the reasons we started drawing games is literally just the way the division's gone. First half of the season, everyone's got a chance of playoffs. You're literally fucking 15th in the league, chance of playoffs. You put three games together. We're now playing the likes of QPR, where they came to St James' Park and we should have won that game. But that was a great result for them. They were cock a hoop with a draw, whereas at the start of the season, they're probably thinking, we can get 3 points here, we can get up the league table, or, you know, who else have we had recently? We've had, you know, Birmingham was a great example where they're not really in relegation danger. Isola's having an absolute beast. But that was a great draw for them, whereas at the start of the season, they probably think, well, we may as well go for it, get 3 points. So I've kind of found myself through looking back through the results, because I couldn't really put my finger on it beyond what you lads are correctly saying. Teams working out, that kind of thing. Maybe a little bit of staleness in our play and team selection, but a lot of teams pick up, you know, draw more games at this point of the season. So it's a tough one. I mean, to finish off this section, it was like, just I'll ask you lads kind of as a whole, or, you know, this quarter of the season, Christmas now, are you satisfied? Do you think, you know what, I said it at the start of the show, Bolland's smiling there. Go on then, Bolland. Are you disappointed with how it's been, particularly since Gale got injured? Yeah. But no, but yeah, we're going to always do better, as we discussed on previous. Are you disappointed in how it's gone?
So yeah, you would have hoped by this point we'd be looking a lot clearer than we are, I think. Mm. Especially, it's not the ultimate goal, but it would be nice to win the league. And I think for a lot of Newcastle fans, like, they want to win the league and it's important to them. And I think you'd hope at this stage we'd be there. But it would be a lot further away, wouldn't we? And I think, you know, so we had the three games, Huddersfield, Reading and Brighton, which was brilliant. But it's also, you know, we followed up Fulham, Bristol just before that, was it? Or Bristol before or after?
Yeah, before.
So there's been a few shockers in there. The home form, for me, I just wish it had been better.
Mickey, do you have something to come in on that?
Yeah, I think you've got to take this period of the season with a bit of perspective and think about that week. We beat our two promotion rivals away from home in the space of 4 days. We came back from Bayern against Brighton. That's enough. That's good enough.
We're in a really strong position. We've got Huddersfield after, we've got 8 games left, and Huddersfield have to win 3 more of those games than we do.
We'll come back to that, because I want to talk about the rest of the season next
week. I want to ask Bolland, would you have taken this position at the start of the season?
Yeah.
You would have, yeah. Snatched my hand off, yeah.
D- Daniel, if I bring it to you in terms of the last, or kind of since January, how do you feel? Do you think it's been good enough for some fans? Some fans say it hasn't been good enough. That's why I'm using that question.
Some games haven't been good enough, but if you look at it as two losses from 12 games, it's been more than good enough. So if Rafa had gotten his midfielder, his winger and his striker in January, we'd be even better off. Some of the draws would have been wins. So overall, I'm leaning towards satisfied.
Just leaving.
Just to cap that off, that section really, I'll ask you, do you think if we don't go up and we continue to draw games, or if we don't win the league, does the blame lie at Benitez, or does it lie with the board for not getting the reinforcements that he wanted?
It's not a relevant question because we're going to get promoted.
Agreed on that, yeah.
It's not a relevant question because we're going to get promoted.
Agreed on that, yeah.
If we don't go, we'll have serious problems and you have to blame Benitez, but I'm absolutely convinced we're going up, yeah.
If we don't win the league then?
Some fans do, I don't care, I just want to get promoted. Like I've said before though, statistically, if you win the league, you don't get relegated. Not that I think we'd get relegated anyway, but teams that finish second tend to do far worse when they go up. Just a point from me about where we are historically. You know what? I think it's 14 seasons of the Championship. There's only three teams had more points than us at this stage, and one of them was us. In 2010, it doesn't count. and that was only 2 points more. See, teams that have had more than us were less, basically. They did buy the league. They got a massive fine off the Football Association play, breaking it in the Championship. They had 83, 25 points, and Reading had 91 points, which is just at this stage. And they actually slowed down at the end of the season. They were so far ahead. So, I mean,
totally different league now. I think we talked about on the way back from Birmingham. Last time we were there in the Championship, was it Forest, Palace and QPR were all in administration.
Coventry as well.
This year you've got Villa, who spent 60 million on like 15th. Norwich have spent like 50 million there, or like 10th or something. Like that's
got
the Championship now.
Sheffield buying Jordan Rhodes for 10 million quid, which is bizarre.
It's also a different league because there's never been a third place that's been so high, that's been so close to the top two in points.
Forest
must have been. Forest pushed us quite a lot. We won the league. Oh, we got promoted with a good 5 games or so to spare though, didn't we?
Yeah,
that was good. That.
But that's the thing you've got to remember. I mean, you're saying that, would you be? Are you disappointed with how it's gone or whatever? Like, you can't be. Like, we've had a brilliant season so far. What nobody could have like fathomed was the fact that Brighton and Huddersfield would be within touching distance of it. And like, you've got to sort of give them like a lot of credit in that they've been ridiculously consistent as well, and it's nothing sort of that's out of our hands. We can't control how other teams are, but you don't see teams at Huddersfield in third place. The runs they've been going on, they've been brilliant, and they're playing like good football, and they're winning ugly games and stuff. So I think if we get promoted, like I think they deserve a lot of credit, because as you've said many times, Dogger, like no team gets to 90 points and doesn't go up, whatever. Like we've been pushed right to the end, and I think if we go up, we deserve a lot of credit, and everyone does, because it's like been, there's no other season, you'll never get a season like this, I don't think, where you've got three teams basically vying that realistically could all still like consider themselves a good shot of winning the league.
Three teams that keep putting in like runs, like long runs of win.
Three teams are on 2 points a game, which is unheard of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To answer Chubb's point, I think if God forbid we didn't go up, there would be questions at every single person at the club, Rafa, well, from Ashley right down to the ball boys and the tea ladies. It would be unacceptable for Newcastle not to get promoted out of this division with Rafa Benitez and the money we've spent and the players we've got. It would be completely unacceptable. But if we're being realistic, all of us, all the listeners, all of us here, Rafa, all the players, everybody knows we're going to get promoted this year because we're the best team in the league.
Well, let's move it on then. So the second part of the show is going to be, you're convinced. I was going to ask you, are you all convinced of promotion?
Oh, well, I'm not sure.
Looking at the fixtures we've got, looking at who the other teams have got, which I'm sure you've all looked at, like, Si, I've not heard much from you. Like, is it a done deal as kind of we've said in the podcast?
Yeah, well, everyone keeps talking about the running. Like all three teams are going to just win all the games so that we have to... We should be worried about the fact that we might not win every game. But as you said before, Huddersfield are 7 points behind and like 30 goals, so 8 points behind. That means they need to win 3 more games than us out of 8 matches. Like, that's going to take a miracle. That basically means Because we'll win four or five of our games.
Easy. That means they need to win every game, doesn't
it? Yeah, it means they need to win every match towards the end of the season. And we've just watched them get battered off. Who was it the other night?
Bristol.
Beat us.
Yeah. Like, Huddersfield aren't going to win eight games. Like, I just don't see how. I think Brighton will be all right. They've just looked consistent all season. But
they have got, to be fair.
Huddersfield have snaked so many points from 1-0s, from scrappy goals, from own goals and stuff. Like, they've had a bit of a Sunderland at times.
And if you could pick eight games though, out of the league, you'd probably pick Huddersfield's eight fixtures.
It doesn't matter though. Like,
It doesn't really matter because they're not going to win every game. It's not realistic.
Like, it's even like, I presume you're talking about league position for those eight games.
Yeah, I can't even remember. I looked at who it was last week. I forgot.
About teams that haven't got anything to play for. It's what we were talking about.
Leeds are the only team who've got anything to play for.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll beat Leeds as well.
And they don't really.
As well. That's Rafa. Like it was a tactical masterclass. I mean, I missed the Huddersfield game, but like Brighton, just I mean they got a jammy goal, but we dominated them in there. The team everyone says are built to win this league. They're the best team in the league and all that sort of hyperbole about them. But like we went in there and did a proper job and looked really good doing it. And I just think that was. Rafa absolutely got it nailed on there, and I think, I mean, obviously Chris Hughton's a really well respected manager, but I think that was like the difference between the two teams was we had Rafa, they had Hughton.
And a massive slice of luck.
What luck?
Well,
what do you mean the fact that we didn't win by six? Chances were missed. We're literally like it was cut. That was if we hadn't won that game, that'd have been the biggest. Travesty, like I think I've ever seen on a football pitch.
You do have to wonder a little bit though, if that hadn't ballooned off his foot and got in,
would have probably gone and scored four. To be honest, Diarmi Oudwe, it was pure class. he meant that. I'm not having it.
You make your own look bomb, that's
what exactly. No, but he had literally like taken two goals off where before that from just like. Misjudging a ball at the back post and then getting in the way of Richie, who should have scored. So he owed we one. It's the least we deserved.
Should we talk about Diarmi a little bit, lads? Number 10 position. I don't know when he's raised it before. Who raised it? You. What were your thoughts on this position?
It isn't necessary.
So for the way we play, it's massively important position. When you think someone like Dwight Gayle desperately needs that support and desperately needs someone who's going to play him in, and Perez, I've said before, I really like Perez. I think there's definitely a really good footballer in there, but we just don't see it often enough, minute by minute, not even by game by game. Diarmi is a championship footballer. Maybe he can do a job in the Premier League sitting further back, but he's not a number 10. When you, Dogger's favourite player, Sissoko, when you think the job he did there at the end of last season, like mobile, getting about the pitch, Diarmi is lethargic. Yeah, loves to miss-kick the ball.
Layman, isn't he? It looks like really, really hard work for him.
A decent player. I like Diarmi, but if that's where Rafa sees him in his plans, then he's good enough for this level, but he's not good enough.
I will hardly agree with that, Bond. He's not number 10.
Where should he play then?
Centre mid.
Well, him and Shelvey could be interesting, but the point I've just made is that everything he does looks so lethargic, so laboured. Yeah. Is he going to provide the work rate over 90 minutes? I'm not convinced.
Every time he's dropped in, when he's been playing number 10 and playing poorly, and he's dropped in the midfield, callbacks come off, someone else has come on to play up front on number 10, and Diarmi's dropped in next to Shelby.
I'll just say, I'll just say this, we're a better team when he plays number 10.
I still don't think he's very good at it.
I don't know where you're coming from on work rate. I think he's got a really high work rate. He's probably covering more ground.
I think he does work hard, but as you say, it looks hard work for him to do it. The point is that comes across after. I mean, we've said loads of times at 60 minutes he's done. Like he can't keep doing the amount of running. No, but it's a different, it's a completely different like position. That's a stupid comment. Like you're not doing. You're not tracking as much. Like when you're one up and you're the man behind, you've got to cover. Like basically, and Gayle doesn't go chasing everybody down. Like Diarmi does a lot of his running, whereas at centre mid, basically you sit in.
I'll stick up for Diarmi.
Completely different.
The AFCON fucked him. He had, if you look at his season, He scored at Wigan away. He scored at Burton away. Two cracking goals as well. He then put that performance in against Burton at home and we did them 4-0 when he was superb. And then he went to AFCON and he's been shit since. So I don't know whether that's really more than a little bit.
Wasn't ever good. I mean, he's a decent player.
Yeah.
That's all he is.
Daniel, where do you stand on Diome Perez?
Simply not good enough this season. It's been a bit of a problem position for us. We scored a lot of goals, but we could have scored more if we had someone a bit more maybe seasoned or used to that position. So I think Perez is or will be the better of the two. Diome is more or less getting used to that position still. So he's 29 now, so I'm not sure how good he's going to get.
Yeah, fair enough, lads. This is a very Chronicle comments. People won't like that. Thing to say, but should Newcastle be playing with two strikers at home?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Depending on who's available, I would say.
Which two? That's
Murphy, yeah. Murphy and Gale.
Definitely Murphy and Gale.
Murphy and Gale.
So you drop Gale into number 10 or you'd be genuine 4-4-2?
If we're
playing
two strikers,
for,
so would you drop one?
So I'm thinking more maybe Gale face Tano. I wouldn't do it personally, but
Murphy behind Gale.
That's mental.
Hold the ball up, flick it on. Yeah, He's laughing now. When we talked about this at Birmingham, he agreed with me wholeheartedly, right? The amount of balls that Murphy was winning.
I believe that conversation was recorded by the
right. Murphy was winning. If he just had someone to flick it onto, would have been ideal. Well, he could just play a bit deeper, couldn't he?
We're talking about a striker dropping deeper, really. Yeah. I think, going back with it, I think Diome's got all the ingredients you need, really, to play in number 10. He is athletic. He can spot a pass. He can be aggressive with the ball at his feet. He's obviously got a shot, but there's something not right when he's playing in there. Tend to get a lot more out of him in centre mid. I think maybe if you're talking about playing two up top, well, probably Shelvey isn't athletic enough to play with just another midfielder next to him. He needs a bit of protection. I think when we come to the Premier League, he might struggle with that a bit.
We've missed Hayden, by the way. I think when Colback's on the pitch with Shelvey, the two of them play so deep that Diome he's been far more isolated since Christmas, yeah. Since we've lost Hayden.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think as well, the people that are willing to play the balls into Diome, he's a player that shows for the ball a lot of the time, and he wants a ball played into feet. We don't have many players that are comfortable to play a ball forward into feet when you're going to have to pass through a couple of players. We just don't have many ball players. Unfortunately, Colbacks, I wouldn't say, is one of those players, and that's one of his centre mids that you need to be able to move the ball about. There's only really Shelvey, maybe Richie, that are comfortable sort of playing balls into feet, and they expect the ball back, whereas you see it countless times, we'll pass up good opportunities to get the ball forward to play a sideward pass or a backwards pass.
Callback's like a new Janus. He plays sideways, only plays sideways, and then once he's passed it sideways, he hides behind someone so he can't get it back.
I think we could play two up top, but it might have to be a major formation shift, going back to what we were talking about earlier with a 3-5-2 or 5-3-2. I think you'd need a bit more legs in midfield to do it.
Which brings you back round to the question, we're top of the league, why on earth would you change the formation now? Like,
as we've also talked about it, is that we've become predictable and it's got a bit stale, and at home.
Yeah, so it's predictable that we will win 2 out of 3 games every week.
I think the really like pissed, angry man inside of me on Good Friday after 8 hours drinking would love nothing more than to see 2 up front like against Leeds and just fucking get into them. But realistically, Rafa's not going to do that, is he? For good reason. If we played...
I was going to say, I think we'd be better looking at 3 up top almost with 3 midfields. You know, like...
Let's get 4 on. Two wide,
one genuine striker.
Somebody the other day who was like, yeah, you know, £4 million buyout, good prospect for next season. I'm like, mate, you can't get a game ahead of Goof Run in the Championship. Like, but... I just don't think he's suited to... I don't think he's a wide player. I don't think he's a winger.
He can't cross. His end product is so bad because he's right out on the wing. He can run up players and take them on, but when he does that, he's stuck at the byline with Gale to aim for. Like, he's not that kind of player. I agree.
Him and Richie, a bit of freedom in that formation, you know, dropping an extra one in midfield, you might see a bit more results out of the likes of Atu, and you might give Richie a bit more licence.
Yeah.
Atu's kind of a pointless player for us to have without someone that can head the ball in the box. Because he's not clever enough to get the ball to Gale.
At home, yes, we should be a lot more aggressive. Yes, we've got by a way better players than any other team in the Championship. But Benitez isn't has never been the sort of manager that's going to send a team out and they're going to go, you know, 3-4-0 up in the first half. Like, he's just not that sort of manager. He's really intelligent, wants to play good footy and get through the game stage by stage. The sooner the fans get behind that and just accept it and stop sort of getting anxious after 20 minutes and not 1-0 up, the better. The more games we will win at home, the better for everyone at the club, really.
Yeah, I agree. Really agree with that.
I mean, we're sort of going through some of the players there. Mickey, you've written down some stuff about this for next season.
I'd written down when we're going to talk at the start, when we're going to talk about Newcastle generally. That we just need to have some perspective on this season, because it doesn't really matter how many games we lose, how many games we play badly, and as long as we get promoted, because all we care about really is being back in the Prem next year. And I think there'll be a huge overhaul of the squad in the summer, because most of them aren't good enough to start in the Premier League and compete in the Premier League. I think we'll build our team around possibly Lascelles, as long as he was alongside a more experienced and better centre-half. I think he could come good. Then Shelby, Richie and Gale are the four players, with possibly Krull to come back in.
I don't think Gale...
Is that a contract as well?
Is he?
Yeah. I'd be shocked if Dwight Gale starts the first game of the Premier League for
us. I think he'll start. I think we'll buy a better striker than him, but I think Gale will start and he'll have a decent spell in the team.
I'm going to disagree with you. And I know, I think that we're not going to be battling relegation. I'm not saying we're going to win the league or get the Champions League or... Maybe we'll not even get top 10, but I don't think we'll be batting relegation at all. And I look at the teams that go up, and I look at the teams on a mid-table in the Premier League, and you look at Bournemouth, Dan Gosling, and I don't even know who else plays alongside him, and I think people are a bit harsh on our lads. They're not world beaters. You know, Jack Colback's played in the Premier League his whole career, and he's got his problems, and he can't play with Shelby, etc. Isaac Hayden's never played in the Premier League before, but I think he's a really good player.
I think
it'll be Matt Ritchie. I think, yeah, we need a new left winger. We need a new number 10. Apart from that, I think Kieran Clarke's played his whole career in the Premier League, albeit without much success for Aston Villa. He's been fantastic. So we're not a million miles, but we need four or five genuine first teamers who are at least going to be either rotated or part of the first team. I don't think we're a million miles away from Bournemouth and Watford. I look at Watford's team and I don't...
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Is that a lot of those teams are built on a solid foundation, which is what Rafa's tried to build and what he started. And I think that's the thing. People, just going back to your point you were saying there, people need to start getting used to the way Rafa plays. You're not going to see Newcastle come out next season and try and blow teams out of the water. They're going to play very similar. They're going to be patient, try and grind teams down, and they're going to be hard to beat. They're not going to give teams opportunities. I suppose that's one of the things we get frustrated with Paul Dummett, but Paul Dummett is a Rafa type of player in that he does his main job first. He does his primary job is defend. Don't let your opposition number get in behind you. Once you've done that, anything extra is a bonus. And I think I agree. There's a few players that need to come in, but generally, I think he'll probably try and stick with mainly the back five, and probably obviously Shelby's going to start. I don't think he's going to look for too much turnover, because if you think about when he came in, he said there were real problems, and obviously the way the team played, we didn't really have a way of playing under the last few years. Exactly, we haven't had a system or anything like that. It's taken time for these players to learn how Rafa wants to play. He's not just going to make widespread changes and sack all them off when they've just learned his system after a season. So I think he's probably going to see something like that as being he wants his spine, he wants his main sort of players to be able to do what he wants, and they've had a year of getting used to it, and then there'll be a few others that'll come in and sort of add to that.
So we're in agreement. You'll keep things the same, but widespread changes.
Exactly.
There'll be five or six players coming in the summer.
In the squad.
It'll be in or around the first team straight away.
This is presuming Rafa stays, of course, which is still already...
I think it will be interesting though. I mean, people are talking about how much we've spent and stuff, but I could see a lot of our players going back to the Championship for good money. I mean, you've just said there, Jordan Rhodes for 10 million. You probably get someone willing to spend that on a Daryl. Exactly. There's a lot of players that have probably got some good value that we could rinse quite a few Championship clubs for.
I was absolutely gobsmacked when I found out he was 25, by the way. He looks like 49, doesn't he? He's weathered.
Do you think they're absolute dead certs to go? Because the top of my list at the minute, I don't want to be negative about any Newcastle player, but Vernon Anita. I think he's absolutely toast. He's literally neither an athlete nor a footballer. I don't understand how he's getting a kick.
That is crap.
Shocking, isn't he?
If he hadn't was fit, he wouldn't be getting a sniff.
I was going to say, careful, this is one of Dodgy's favourite players, isn't it?
Anita,
he goes back and forth on him. I've been consistent in my hatred for Anita.
Yeah.
That's true, actually. One week he absolutely despised him, the next he's like, Anita was our best player.
I'll give credit, you know, Leeds away and Birmingham at home, Anita was man of the match. Birmingham away last week, he was Bolland, he was, I just can't, I didn't even have the adjectives, lads, like, he was so bad. So bad.
I wonder with the day-to-day of football and basically him being in training every day, and I've seen a few bits on Instagram and Twitter where he's very involved with the patter with the likes of Yedlin and all the rest of the lads. He's on a contract. I don't think Benitez kind of just wants to just be like, nah, you're not up to much. You're not getting a single sniff this season. Because even at my level, like, I mean, playing really, really low standard Saturday football, you have to kind of use your whole squad and give everyone a chance, and just for morale, because you don't want people feeling outcasted.
Have you got any lads in there just for the crack? Like,
Yeah.
They're just purely there for a bit of passing. Basically sit on the bench, keep the bench warm for 90 minutes a game, but they're keeping everyone's spirits up on the bench anyway.
That's me, basically, yeah.
Anita's out of contract, so I think he's gone. The club would have offered him a new contract by now. Goofran's gone.
Goofran's staying.
I love it how the Chronicle lead with, like, the last graffer, is Mitrovic good in the summer? Like, he's obviously going to say no. Headline, Mitrovic not for sale, like, as if he'd be, oh, he's off. Like, as if he would kill him like that. But he's where everyone who's listening to the podcast. I mean, Daniel, I'll bring you in. Are you a Mitrovic fan still, despite all the evidence?
About him, I think he's still young, there's still potential there, but I'm not convinced he has my biggest issue.
Yeah, but I mean, I take what you're saying, and he did all right last season. I think people exaggerate how well he did, but when you say he's not a Rafa Benitez type player, surely he should be able to adapt a little bit, you know, adapt his game slightly to try and get in the team.
Yeah, he's still young, as I say. So, and Rafa is the type of manager that improves the players. So there's still the possibility that he'll be far better than he is now. I think Rafa said he's not looking to sell him in the summer. So that must mean he has some confidence in him still. But looking at the type of strikers Rafa's used previously in his career, big burly man isn't that common for him. So I don't know. He's not a quick player. He's not a very intelligent player. He's there to create space, score goals from inside the box. So in one way, he's limited, but he's also could be good for opening up for others.
As soon as I'm a massive romantic. Like, when he was first coming in, and like even the start of this season, like all of his, you know, the stuff he says about the club, dressing his band up in a tune kit, all the rest of it, like, he totally bowled me over.
It's like exactly what you want to hear, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate that when he goes out on the pitch.
Ideally, if you could just score goals.
He could be the one you keep about as the crack. Like,
yeah, for the pie. Yeah, he's the one, yeah.
The frustrating.
10-year deal, lifetime deal. Doesn't he worry about footy? Yeah. Doesn't matter. He's injured halfway team in goals.
The frustrating part about it is, like, I know you say he didn't do that great last season, and I agree with you, like, he missed a lot of chances last season, but he still scored something like 11 goals.
You know, he did fine for a bad good team first season in England, but I just think people exaggerate.
Yeah,
he was some kind of, like, superstar. He did good season, but it just hasn't happened this season.
I think there's just too many occasions where he makes a clear goal-scoring opportunity look like a half chance.
He needed to have a big year this year, and he's barely been in the side.
I do think the same about Perez, though. I've been disappointed with Perez a bit this year. I thought he would really come on this year, and he would go into the Prem next year on fire, and it hasn't happened.
The only difference with Perez, I think, is his attitude is there. He does the right things. No matter how many times he gets dropped, when he comes on the pitch, even if he comes on for 5 minutes, he seems to try. Mm-hmm. And Rafa sees something in him. I know he's Spanish.
I don't think you can say that Mitch isn't trying.
He scored the winning goal at Brighton, which has to count for something.
That was huge. Yeah. And I think if anyone's got a chance next season, it's him, because in the Premier League, he looked like one hell of a player, and the physicality of the championships probably is not up his street.
I was going to say, I think, funnily enough, they're probably two players that might just suit the Premier League more than the championship. In terms of the championship is a scrappy, like, hard league. You've got to be, like, tough, like, physically and mentally. Like, it's just not for everybody. I think if you put...
We can't hack in the championship playing that.
Yeah,
no, but I don't know, like, he did, but he did, that's the thing, though, he did, but that's the thing, he did better in the Premier League in a worse team last season than he has in this year, like, so I know, like, logic says that's ridiculous, but there's got to be something in that, and I think Perez, like, it was fine in the Premier League for a couple of years, like, everyone was saying that he could have got a move to a better things. He's had a shocking season this year for whatever reason, but it might just be, I don't know whether it's the respect of the Premier League. Maybe you get a bit more time on the ball, or you get a bit more space because players are more worried about sort of your quality. Whereas in the Championship, it's just that scrappy. It's like you don't get any space. Just players are just sort of just putting everyone under pressure.
The problem for Perez and Mitrovic for me is that they look dead slow against championship defenders, and championship defenders are slow. If Mitrovic is getting outpaced by Blackburn centre-backs like he did, it was like, where they'll both bring in money, which tells you something. People will rate them.
Perez is, I don't know how they estimate this, but Perez's values had the most appreciation of any footballer at Newcastle United. So for what we've got him for, to what he's worth now, you know, his value's gone skyrocketed. Well,
he scored like something like 17 Prem goals in two seasons. Mm-hmm. So that's for a player who's 23 now. Mm-hmm. He's still worth something. I would stick with Perez next season because
you know, 100%.
I mean, Mitrovic, Daryl Murphy will probably go, as much as I fucking love him. Absolute hero. He'll go, and then really you've just got Gale as a striker in the Premier League. So there is definitely work to be done there in terms of improvements.
Well, like with Sturridge during the week.
Absolutely love ridiculous. Love it.
Transfer rumours in March, man. What's a transfer rumour doing?
he's definitely leaving Liverpool. There's no way Klopp just doesn't fancy him at all.
Yeah, actually, wants actually that kind of transfer, though, will he?
You've hit the nail on the head here. If Ashley has to sanction transfers,
ludicrous, yeah.
Which just doesn't fit in with our financial structure.
That's definitely not going to happen. So this week so far we've had Isco.
Okay.
Isco relationship with Benitez, apparently. Wait, personal relationship with Benitez.
Was that trying to get Cisco back?
And then Wilshire, Rooney, Sigurdsson. Any foundation at any of these?
Yeah, I think Domino's are after us.
We'll finish off. We're going to talk about Strawberry Place in a bit, but we'll finish off, lads. We've got 8 games left. 5 of them at home. Preston, Barnsley, Leeds. Who else? Other teams at home. Preston, Barnsley, Leeds, Burton, Ipswich, Cardiff, and someone else away from home. Who are our Sheffield, of course. What do you think we need from these games? Forget about the other teams, lads. What do we need from the last 8 games? 16 points? 10 points? I mean, we're 12 points from 90. Is it 12 points from 8 needed?
Yes.
That's I think four wins would be enough.
4 wins. So there's a lot of margin for error there.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
I reckon we'll do it with 3 wins and 3 draws, though.
Right. Which would be give us, what, 12 points.
Yeah. Well, that would be enough for second. If we want to win the league, it's probably...
I don't think we're going to lose. I think we'll do it with 3 wins and 3 draws and then have 2 games left.
Daniel, do you agree with that? Do you think it's... you know, how do you think the 8 games will go?
We'll win at least 4 of them. Draw 2. Lose 2.
Pretty comprehensive and to the point, yeah. So that's the 3-quarter season review. We're going to talk a little bit now about something less funny. It is the acquisition of land on Strawberry Place, which Newcastle United leases from Nexus, a 125-year lease, and has been sold for the development of student housing. Chubbs, I know you want to lead on this.
Well, I actually think this is quite funny, the way my notes have started on it. So Strawberry Place development, 390 student beds, 2 tower office blocks. What's the point? Literally, what is the point?
That was Strawberry Place, thankfully.
A essentially, it's not exactly historic ground, but the main issue with regards to Newcastle United Football Club is that it will definitely infringe on us expanding the stadium in the future, when I'm pretty sure, you know, we'll be in a better position given 4 or 5 years under Benitez's stewardship. I think everyone would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the demand is certainly there to expand the stadium, given that I actually can't get a ticket for the Leeds home game if anyone's got any spares. I think my girlfriend would quite let her go as well, so that would be two if anyone can get them.
But just the one, then.
yeah, I think it's, you know, it defies common sense. The other two stands, I think you can't build on them because of listed buildings, is that right?
Yeah, the East Stand, definitely.
East Stand. Yeah.
There is a problem behind the Millburn and the John Hall for Libby McCann's.
They're also as big as you could get a football stadium anyway. Imagine how far away from the pitch you'd be.
Might even be in the logistics of building it, but I'm sure there's a reason we can't expand those two stands.
So it's the Gallagher, isn't it? That's what we could expand.
So I would say that surely common sense says that you've got 50,000 plus footfall there on any match day. Key city centre point. What good to the local economy, never mind Newcastle United Football Club, what good to the local economy does building student halls there give to Newcastle City? Like, surely some sort of retail, dining, a bar, anything would be better for the matchday experience, for the local economy, for local businesses, for tourism in the city. We're also going to have reduced parking on a matchday. Now, for those that don't actually live in the city, it is a complete farce trying to get around Newcastle City Centre in a car, right? Like, just try it on a Saturday afternoon. Literally, it's all one way. You're diverted out of the city rather than into the city on every single road. If we're to lose more parking on a match day, it's just detrimental. I mean, I've got a wider point that I think a lot of the city centre should be pedestrianised for that reason. The population's too dense for the size of the city centre and what we're trying to force into it on given days. But in general, this is the silliest idea the club have ever had, from what I hear from...
So what the club would say to your Chubbs there, and this is in the last 4 minutes, this has nothing to do with them. The club would say it has absolutely nothing to do with Newcastle United, because when Mike Ashley bought Newcastle, he bought 29 different companies and he has separated them out into whatever. So what would you say to that? Because I it could be argued that's an incredibly disingenuous answer for the club to give. But, I mean, is your issue there with Newcastle City Council as much? Because in terms of what it's been developed for, my issue is that whatever it's been developed for would be incredibly short-sighted of any businessman to take the 43 million quid or whatever it's worth for this is going to make them and put it in Newcastle United. I would be disappointed with that. Yeah. And for the money not allegedly to be going into Newcastle United, it hasn't happened yet, so we can't say for sure, but that's what's been reported, that it weren't going to Newcastle United. Sounds a lot like asset stripping for me. And if Ashley's willing to do this now, when people are supposedly more engaged with Newcastle than any other point in his reign in terms of attendance, in terms of interest, ticket sales, etc., what would he do if we didn't get 5 years in terms of the stadium being on prime retail land in the city centre? Is anyone else worried? I am by that.
Yeah, it's just outrageous that he's been. I know that land was bought and it's not always been part of St James's Park, but
at least, yeah.
It's just outrageous to start selling off our land and just restricting the growth of the club. I mean, we talked about it before we started recording this. When we finished expanding the stadium, it was the second biggest club ground, at least in England. As it's now, you've got Liverpool expanding, Man City expanding. Sheffield have just got permission to expand, which I think will probably take it over what we've got. Sunderland have still got capacity to expand. You know, very quickly we could see 52,000 be not really that impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a pretty average figure for a Premier League ground, and that would be a real shame. Because one of the things, even though we've talked about it earlier, is that the support is a little bit flaky and a little bit dodgy at the minute. Like, one of the things that Newcastle's famous for is having atmosphere, and if you end up with grounds like Anfield being bigger, our famous atmosphere all mm-hmm. of a sudden is going to become a famous atmosphere of the past.
Well, I think the other thing as well, just talking on, you know, it being short-sighted business, I don't understand, this is a little bit off the point, but I don't understand why we don't do events at St James as well, like Sunderland do, you know, when they have the likes of Rihanna's and Beyonce's and all the rest of it over there. Like, we don't make enough use of the stadium and see it as an events arena, which essentially it is. To not allow us to expand on that. I mean, personally, you call it the most stereotypical Geordie you want, but under Benitez, I think we'll be in European football in the next five years. in the next 10 years, we could be solidified in that, and the demand just going to keep going up. What we're going to do, start charging 100 odd quid for a home game ticket, because there's 70,000-80,000 people want a home ticket and only 50,000 can get them.
That may well be it. That may be well be what they would come back. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of second guessing involved here. Here's what I think. I could be totally wrong on what Mike Ashley thinks. Newcastle sell out 52,000 at home any Saturday home game this season, as long as the away fans turn up. But St James's Park is full of half-season tickets, cheap deals, family deals, the biggest family section in Europe, 15,000 tickets. All of that is a result of a lack of demand. See, Mike Ashley thought he was buying a money-making machine. He thought he was buying 50,000 every week, and he soon realised that, not all down to him, but mostly, you know, I remember, I think Ashley's first game in charge was Villa at home under O'Neill. We were under Allardyce. There was empty seats that day, 50,000. It was a 5:30 kickoff, 2007. That'll have shocked him, I think. And that season, we got relegated. No, it was the following season, got relegated. Tickets in the early Ashley era, in fact, the whole of the Ashley era, up until this season, have been very easy to come by. Like you say, you can't get tickets for Leeds. I've seen stuff on Twitter, spares for Bristol, spares for Fulham, which is just, you know, no other football club in the country would have that. Which, man, you play Fulham at home, there's tickets. We play Fulham at home, there's no tickets. But that's partly down to the fact that he's eroded the support. And if any of you have listened to our Atmosphere podcast, which has been well received, it's just so, like, you meet so many people who know so many people who won't go back under Ashley. And he's corroded the support that much, he now just thinks to himself, well, if I put the ticket prices up, no one will come. And he's wrong. I think he's wrong. But that's just me second-guessing how he thinks. And he thinks, you know, I mean, our season tickets are going to be cheaper in the Premier League next season, which is good for us on a personal basis. What, 50, 40 quid cheaper? No other team in history has probably got promoted and put their season ticket prices down. Not that they have to, but I think that a lot of people have missed the little PR campaign that's been going on just to prevent this. And I think it's worked to an extent, because no one cares about Strawberry Place. We're talking about it. The Newcastle United Supporters Trust talk about it. True Faith talk about it. The Chronicle picked up on it in a very minor way. The very small.
I'm desperate to raise awareness of it. I just don't want it to, you know, everything to stop before it's too late, before people in the city realise, because I think it's the student accommodation thing, without getting away from the football, is a wider problem for the city's economy. You know, they don't pay any council tax. They're only here for a certain amount of time. It's ugly. It's useless land. You know, yes, we need students in the city, but we don't want to become a city that's reliant on seasonal trade, which essentially I went to university in Leeds, and it is completely seasonal trade down there. I mean, in the summer, you lose 100,000 students, and it's a ghost town in the likes of Henley. It's embarrassing, really. You know, we're a proud city, and we certainly need to be looking at iconic land like Strawberry Place and at least using it for, as I say, dining, local retail, local businesses, something useful if we're not going to expand the stadium.
A lot of football clubs these days have now got fan parks outside the ground, bars, that kind of thing. I mean, where? Blessed with a lot of bars, you know, compared to the likes of Old Trafford. The Emirates, who've installed them so people can not have to drink 30 miles away or whatever. But I take your point, and it's really depressing that in such a positive season, although there's people who've had our problems and we're moans, that this is this could define this season for years to come, because just saying...
The future of the club,
it's
really sad.
I think it says a lot about Ashley and what Ashley probably has in mind for the club. Like, we're all worried that there's a real chance that Rafa might not be here in the summer. Mm-hmm. Is Mike Ashley happy for Newcastle United to sit between 13th and 8th in the Premier League with a ground that's increasingly becoming more and more average in the Premier League? Is that what he sees? He gets his money and that's it.
He's got a short-term goal in Newcastle. However much he says it's not for sale, blah, 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 blah. As soon as he can get all of his money back, he's gone, and he doesn't care what he leaves behind him. So he doesn't care that land is the future of the club. If we ever need to progress to the level of where Man United are now, we need that land. We need the ability to extend the ground on that land. He doesn't care, because in 5 years' time, he takes his money, he fucks off, leaves us with half the assets we came into Ashley's ownership with. He's not arsed. The whole concept of the club, the whole ethos of the club, they don't care whatsoever about the community. Not at all.
It's frightening as well. If people know the area around the ground, if they're fortunate enough to live here, the if sort of from Shark Bar upwards is now, there's Northumbria Business School, but the rest of it is all student accommodation, whereas before there was nothing there. And the worrying thing about sort of culture in the city as well is they're really, really high built buildings, and they're taken away from St James in the skyline of the city.
Yeah, you can't see it anymore.
You can't see it.
Coming up to James Wheelock.
You can see.
You can't see because that stupid yeah. Salmon Hotel.
And that actually used to be the Brown Ale site as yeah. well. And surely, you know, there should be something there. I mean, there's a blue star on the side of the Sandman. Well done, lads. Do you know what I mean? Like, cheers for that. Cheers for that note to our culture and history. But
supposedly someone at the council has guaranteed that there's still going to be glimpses of St James's from key strategic places around the city. Whereas one of the defining features, one of the best things about Newcastle as a club, for me, is the fact that it's right in the fucking middle of the city. You can see the ground from everywhere. You can see the ground from Gateshead.
My drive, if you don't know, my unfortunate drive back from Sunderland on a weeknight, like, before you even get anywhere near the Tyne Bridge, you can see St James's Park.
Yeah, it's on the top of the hill. It's amazing. The city, it's
when you're going across the Tyne Bridge, St James's Park, spectacular.
Absolutely sensational. Yeah. I mean, If you've been to Bolton away, for example, I mean, their stadium is in what is their equivalent of the Silver Link. Yeah, yeah. So, like, we really are blessed, and we really need to sit up and take notes.
If you've been to the stadium, like, theirs is next to a junkyard and a dump. No word of a lie.
I think that just about does it. Thanks to everybody who came to the Gallagher Flags quiz. It was nice to meet a lot of you face to face. We raised £3,000. If you haven't seen the video yet of the players asking the questions and the outtakes, have a look. It's a good value. Lads, thanks very much. I've enjoyed this. We'll be back. I'll have a Wigan preview Thursday night with a select few of anyone who wants to do it with me. Got a Wigan fan coming on, which will be decent. And then we'll be back. Wigan Saturday night, probably post-game. Thanks for listening. Give us a follow at TF Weekly Pod and True Faith and UFC Podcast on Facebook. So, Daniel, thanks very much for your time, mate. I hope it's been all right.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And Chubbs, first time. I hope it wasn't too bad. We've enjoyed having you.
Thanks.
And the rest of you lads have been as average as usual. So,
yeah, you don't
cheers.
You were too rubbish yourself.
Thanks.